afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. We are live on Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and we are also archived on iTunes. So thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to have a great show today. Today is going to be a little bit lighter of a show, but you know what? Sometimes this topic, having the time of your life, little lessons to live by, well, you know what? Sometimes it's not so light for everybody, but I'm going to take it on the lighter note today. We will also be talking about those that may not be able to look at life and have it a little bit lighter for them. My guest today is Alan Klein. I love to have Alan on the show. He's been on before. He's the official only certified Jollytologist, and you can also look through our RSS feed and find that other show where we spoke with Alan about that. He is an award-winning professional speaker and author, and he has tons of books. He's sold over 600,000 already. Can you imagine that? Goodness, I've got folders and folders of stuff here, and I just can't even seem to put it together for one. So he has a great following. And he has a lot of books out. And today the book we're going to be talking about is Having the Time of Your Life, Little Lessons to Live By. You know, this is 500 inspired ideas about what truly matters. And, you know, it's a book that you put aside your bed, and when you sit down, you say, oh, just plopped in this chair. My day sucks. How many people have said that? Come on, nobody ever wants to admit that. You know, I say it a lot sometimes, and sometimes I don't say it at all, but I think the people that don't want to admit it are ones that are saying, I'm probably saying that, you know, to myself. I'm sitting down and I'm in my house and I just can't seem to get out of the slump. Well, you know, this book is a great idea to have around. Little tiny phrases, you know, that will just say, oh, maybe I don't need to worry about that so much. Oh, maybe that's not just so important. Oh, that is so funny. I never thought of that. And I really think these types of books are inspirations. So, Alan, thank you so much for joining us today. I just think this is going to be a great talk. How about you?
Yeah, thank you for having me back on your show, and I always know it's a great day when I could be on a show like yours.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I always look to you for the uplifting. You know, that's I was so anticipating the show today.
Oh, great. You know, the funny thing is, once we like hear something, it like sticks with us, and it almost like starts to lift us up if it's an uplifting thought. As before the show, we were talking about my next book, which comes out next March, which is You Can't Ruin My Day. And I can tell you in a moment how that book came about. But I've been asking people for testimonials, other writers and speakers and well-known personalities for testimonials. And I've gotten two people that said, you know, I was having a really rotten day and all this was happening to me, and I realized the title of your book, You Can't Ruin My Day, and I start not letting any of that ruin my day, just from knowing the title of the book.
Absolutely. I think just that shift, or just that consciousness that it's even going on, just like when you sit down and you say your day sucks, it's like, does it really? You know?
Yeah. In fact, the editor of that book, the publisher, which is Viva Editions, but the editor is Brenda Knight.
Brenda.
And she called me up and she said, you're not going to believe this. But I got up, I was in a rush, I got dressed quickly, I went to get my cup of coffee at my usual place, and the woman taps me on the shoulder and she says, lady, you know, you have your dress inside out. And Brenda turned around to her and started laughing hysterically. She said, I'm not going to let that ruin my day.
Absolutely. You know, it's so funny. We say those little things when we really get into those pinches, something like that will just click our minds over. I can remember going to a medical rotation at a doctor's office. And I don't know, I think my daughter was putting up a fit that day to not go to daycare before school. But anyway, I got there, and it was like in the afternoon. It was already 5 or 6 hours gone by. For some reason, I was really tired. And, I mean, I started to slouch down, and I looked down at my feet, and I had one brown shoe and one black shoe on, you know. But nobody had said anything the whole day. And I just looked down at them, and it was just like, you know, that was all the encouragement you needed for the rest of the day. And the doctor had caught me looking down at my shoes, and she says, yeah, I figured you were just having that kind of day. And I said, yeah, I was, but I'm okay now, and it's no big deal. And we all laughed.
And it was
about
a wonderful way to kind of get a little chuckle between you and someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah, and to lighten it up, you know, I mean, I wasn't tired anymore. It was just like, oh, that's so funny. And, you know, those things stick with us. And I think those little tiny times will stick with us so that when we are having a rough day, we can say, don't you remember this or don't you remember that? And how funny was that? So they're,
right,
they're
and
kind
often
of like,
you don't, yeah, you don't see that humor, as you just said, until hindsight. You know, go,
yeah,
that was pretty funny. At the time, maybe not so, but later on, you look back and, yeah, that was kind of funny. I had my dress inside out, or I had two different shoes. That was pretty funny.
Absolutely. And it's sort of like a little charm bracelet you can think of in your mind, you know, little things to pick off and say, oh, I remember that time, you know. So it's kind of like a little
charm
token,
bracelets,
I think,
in my mind. What a great book title.
Ah!
Well, the charm bracelets
of my
mind.
You will put my
one about
shoes in there now. Now put my shoe story in that book.
I mean, Chicken Soup for the Soul, of which I've written, I think, I'm in four or five of their books. But, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Charm Bracelets of the Mind, I think it has a possibility here.
Absolutely. You know, so let's talk about this book, Having the Time of Your Life. I mean, my gosh, if you look at this past decade, does anybody want to say they're having the time of their life? And it's like, are you insane? You know, we've had 9/11, we've had Hurricane Katrina, we've had the financial crisis. People have lost jobs and homes and everything around the world. And if you actually write down where you've been in 2000 and the year, you know, when the 2000 turned over, I look back and I'm going, oh my gosh, I am such a shadow of what I was before, you know? Don't you think so?
Well, let me ask you, when you say a shadow, do you mean, I'm not sure what you mean by that, lesser or more?
More.
Are you lesser now
stuff,
or more now?
Oh, no, all that other stuff has gone away. I mean, like all that stuff that I thought was so vitally important is just not at all anymore. I mean, you remember when they were saying, oh, my gosh, the world is going to crash at year 2000. Everybody go out and get your duct tape and your plastic and seal up your house. I mean,
right,
I remember that. I lived in Arizona.
Right.
That's what they told us to do.
Right. And, you know, I this is just maybe a personal thing, but I think as things get, like, more serious and more serious things happen in the world, mm-hmm. I think we may realize how we are somehow all connected.
Yeah.
You know, and how we need to work with each other, and how this hatred is not serving us. But
mm-hmm.
because we're kind of human beings and we don't learn from when things are going well, I think we need to be hit over the head from time to time and have some wake-up calls like 9/11, giving us a possibility of joining forces with everyone else in the world and not have enemies and not hate other people. But then we sometimes don't take that opportunity, as I don't think we did in 9/11, and we begin to hate again. But maybe if it happens enough, we'll finally get it, you know, finally go, wait a minute, this is not working. But, you know, I'm only me. that's my little theory, but I'm hoping that all of this not so great stuff will help us see love for each other. You know, I did a meditation at a Unity service this past Sunday, and I talked about, you know, breath and watching your breath, but I also realized we all are breathing the same air, you know, and it connects us. Each person in this world is breathing right now. If they're alive, they are breathing. We are breathing. And somewhere, you know, all those molecules, all that air goes around the world, and they could be breathing the same air that I did last week.
Right.
So we're all connected, and I don't know when we're going to realize that, but I hope it's soon.
But I think so, too, as you look in, as you said, I think events happen in history. Look at the AIDS crisis in the 80s. I mean, I was a dental hygienist then and pregnant at the time. And it was just before it went to the media. And I was working on a lot of AIDS patients and never even knew about it. They didn't even know they had it. You know, we can go all down that rabbit hole. But that was a time where people have actually became separated, I think. I think that was a real separation. Because before that, people really didn't have a reason. They knew there were antibiotics. They knew they could get taken care of or whatever. But then the AIDS thing came in, and that was a fear. So that fear separated us. In other words, I can remember times when you went to church, remember, you would never do the peace sign with anybody, or you would be bringing little cloths to wipe off the pews, or you would sit in the back or whatever. Same thing with grocery stores. You'd see that fanaticism, you know, I mean, all that stuff that people would do, the craziness to be able to avoid being with people or other people that they didn't know. So now, again, doesn't that bring us right back to Ebola times? What's going to happen now?
Oh, I was just going to bring that up. Yeah, so here we have Ebola.
Yeah.
Now we're afraid, you know, it's going to spread. There's people now in Texas with it, and one man at least right now, and they're afraid other people came in contact with him. It seems like it's something like that is always here with us. So, you know, my thing is, when these things happen, what can we learn from this?
Right.
You know, what? How can we grow spiritually from this? What can we learn from this? That's why these things happen to us, I think, is that so we evolve and we become a higher being.
Well,
I don't know what the answer is, but I know what the question is. What can we learn from this?
Right, because you look at Ebola and everybody was saying, oh, it's over there. In other words, it's separate from me. Remember, people would say that. It's not here. It's separate. But now that it is, quote, here, they're like, not me. It's not coming to my town. And they're almost getting up in defiance and resistance. And like you said, it's really all about us. You know, it's everybody here. You need to take care of yourself and be responsible for these things. Yeah. And, you know, I think when you talk about having the time of your life, you know, a lot of people say that I'm going to let that rule my life. You know, I'm going to stay away from things. So then they end up not interacting with other people. Or they set their life up not enjoying certain things because of their fears are so large. And how can you have a time of your life if you're, you know, always riding that pony of fear, right? Every time you walk out the door.
Yeah. What you just said reminded me of my dad. He would never get on a plane. He would never fly. And he said he was afraid of claustrophobia. I said, Dad, the plane is like 50 times as big or even bigger than your apartment. You know, and you're not afraid to be in your apartment. But he never got on a plane. And when I was living, I do live on the West Coast, they were on the East Coast, they took a train across country.
You
know, it took days and days. And then I said, why don't you take the train back through Canada? It's so beautiful. No. We're going to go back the same route that we came. Like, I don't know where that came from, but he had all this fear of things he didn't know, fear of the unknown.
Right.
And which totally stopped him. I mean, this is really funny, I think, looking back. It wasn't at the time, but every Sunday we would go to the same exact restaurant and we would order the same exact thing. And he was afraid to go to a different restaurant. Or order a different thing from the menu. And I remember as a teenager, it was a Chinese restaurant, and so that time you got like two from column A and two dishes from column B. And I wanted a different dish. Instead of lobster Cantonese, I wanted, I don't know, pork ribs. I don't know what it was. And he wouldn't let me get it. And I just, I was a teenager, I just stormed out of the restaurant, you know, I'll get my dinner at home, and just left the restaurant. But it was so weird. He was so stuck. And you know what? Talking about ungrateful for not so great stuff, that his not being positive has totally turned me around so that I am very positive. my attitude, because he always had such a negative attitude. So I'm very grateful that he was like he was, because it helped me see that I didn't want to be that way.
And I think, you know, when we look back at history, we had this conversation this morning on another show that I was on, and we were saying, if you look back, post-World War II, people were really looking for security and stability. They had to feel safe, and they had to feel that nothing would come out from under them. So they began to total all of their collections, their beliefs, and put it in a little box, and that was them. So in other words, it was their identity. And it's really hard to change those people, because a lot of them are still dying with those beliefs now in their 80s, 90s, and 100s. But you look at the second generation down, which is 40s, 50s, and 60s, and that's definitely the ones who are changing and saying, now, I don't want I started to live like that in the 60s and 50s, and you know, but now I don't anymore. So they're the ones that are giving up their jobs, divorcing their husbands, getting rid of the houses, downsizing, you know, being these revolution type people that are now, you know, AARP is just loving, you know, in their 60s and 70s. They're like out there dancing and everything. So they're the ones came with that.
You're right. And the new norm, I think, these days for young people is you don't have a job for life, as my father did, as my relatives did. The big thing today is that you can adapt. You can change. The big thing is change, because the world with electronics, I mean the internet and stuff, the world is the tech world is changing so rapidly that you need to change too. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind. And so it's a whole new way of looking at your work, your life, your job, is to be flexible, to change, to move with the flow.
And the concept, too, of storing up all of these outside things like homes and things in your house of value and a safety deposit box and CDs and all that other stuff, all of these young people realize that that can be gone in a minute. I mean, I can remember in my generation, you know, if you remember, oh gosh, what was it, maybe in the 60s, late 60s, when the Teamsters lost all of their retirement funds, you know, to whatever. So you remember, you know, all these times when these big retirement funds were gone away. So they're saying, I saw my parents live with that, so I'm just going to be able to live each day as it comes instead of living miserly now and storing it up for later, and it might not even be there later.
Right. Yeah, I got a real wake-up call several years ago about possessions. My cousin, who lived also in New York City, was like a sister to me, and she passed away, and I was the designated one to go to her apartment and clean it out. And I'm looking around, and there are all these things that I'm sure had a lot of value. She traveled all over the world, and she brought back things. It was a lot of value to her, but it wasn't a lot of value to anyone else. And I had a very hard time, other than just taking it to, like, Goodwill or, you know, putting it on the garbage, hard time getting rid of things because nobody wanted it.
And that is so vitally true. You know, I have a picture of here in New Orleans. All the graves are above ground, and in between these two huge ones was a moped, brand new. And I just looked at it. I took the picture, and you know what came to my mind? You can't take it with you. You know, you cannot take it with you. Here's a moped parked right at the gravestone, and you're not taking it with you. You can't. So, you know, I have people that are, you know, with end of life, I work so much with people, and they say, oh, but I want to make sure that I leave this, that, and the other. And I'm like, why are you leaving that? And they said, because I feel guilty. So really, if you think about that, that's a life of guilt, so that when you pass away, your people behind you will be bequeathed with this stuff, you know? And
give it to them now if you
want
to give it away. Don't wait, give it now.
They're thinking it makes up for their sins instead of really, are the people behind you going to say that? No. So really we need to be able to communicate, I think, a lot better, which is, I mean, your book is great to do that, because you communicate all of your books. you know, to something to shake you. You know, read a phrase and say, hey, you know, maybe I need to call somebody. Maybe I need to pay attention to something else. I don't need to go buy that sweater for them. Maybe I ought to just buy them a cell phone so they can call me. Something like that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and
great.
Shifting, you know?
You know what I like to do, talking about my book, is I love just opening it and
yes.
seeing what quote or what little story comes to me, because to me that's like maybe I need to learn that today, or maybe there's something in there for me today. So I just opened to page 10, and if you
mm-hmm.
have the book, you might want to try that too. And my finger pointed to something by David A. Schmaltz. I don't know who that is, but he said, life
uh-huh.
is a roller coaster. Life is a roller coaster. Try to eat a light lunch.
And see what it does? It just lightens your mood in a second, doesn't it?
It lightened my mood. Since I just had lunch, I thought, what if I was on a roller coaster right now where my lunch
yeah.
would be?
Well, you know, I had just opened the book also before the show, and the first one I opened it up to is, what if everything is an illusion and nothing exists? In that case, I definitely overpaid for my carpet, and that's by Woody Allen.
I know who said it. Woody
yes.
Allen,
and,
yes.
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 And you know what? That's so true, because after Katrina, you know, when we lost everything, it was like, I just don't care about this stuff anymore. You know,
mm-hmm.
and we got some replacements like couches and table and a bed and stuff, and didn't go overboard. And then we're going to get ready to relocate again. And you know, we caught ourselves saying, won't it be great to leave all this crap behind us again and go with nothing? And it was
yeah,
so freeing
yeah.
to say,
yeah.
I don't need to keep dragging it. And it's only
right.
a decade old, and I still don't want it, you know?
Yeah, my mom was great about that. And I think I got part of my sense of humor from her. She was very funny, but she was moving to a new place, and she had this rickety little TV table, snack table, and
uh-huh.
she was taking things out of the cupboard to put in a box to pack and ship, and she said, I put this pile of dishes on the snack table, and the snack table, because it was so rickety, fell and
mm.
broke half the dishes. Oh, Ma, you lost half your dish. She said, no, now I don't have to pack half my stuff.
That's right, isn't it? It is absolutely correct.
So
you know, and if we look back, what importance we give stuff instead of the value of ourselves and our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
you're right. I'm looking around at all my stuff. And thinking, uh-oh.
Well, you know what's so funny is yesterday I was having a stressful day for myself, and for some reason I had a cup of coffee on my desk with stacks and stacks of books. I've got about 30 books on there, and all of these papers of my writings and on my computer and my cell phone, and I put down a cup of coffee. And you know what? I've never, ever, since I've ever had a computer, put coffee next to it.
Mm.
Yesterday, for some reason, I tipped
coming.
Over that coffee. Don't you know that? So I took my hand, and I had to get everything off the desk really fast, so I just threw everything on the floor. It's all over the living room floor, so it could get cleaned off of the coffee, right? Do you know,
mm-hmm.
I left it all on the floor still, and I said, you know what? I'm really sick of this desk. So I'm gonna leave all the stuff there till I decide what I want to do with it next, but it's not going back on the desk.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it just
well,
didn't
I think
have
I should take
change.
A garbage can and did what you did and just take my hand on the desk and just move it. Because the piles keep getting higher. I don't
yes.
know why, but.
Yeah, me too. You know, there was another page in here, too. Let's see. It was, goodness, page 105. It's, if my doctor told me I had only 6 months to live, I wouldn't brood. I'd type a little faster. And I can't read who wrote that.
I think I know.
Isaac.
It's Isaac Asimov.
Yes. And, you know, I always ask patients that, or clients, and I've always asked other people that too. And they would say, oh, I don't feel well. I'm so afraid to go to the doctor. I said, what if he told you that you only have 2 days? What would you change?
Mm.
And so many people have long drawn out answers. And you know what my answer would be is absolutely nothing. Because I text my kids or call them you know, you'll get a text or a call from me almost every day, sometimes every other day. But it always says, I love you, I care for you, I hope you have a great day, whatever it is. And I just keep my connections going with people. So if that happened, they would never say, I haven't heard from mom in months or years.
Right.
So I think
that
you,
is
you
great.
You should keep the connections, you know, that are vitally important to you tight. And
right,
and
that is great. And you know, there's I don't know if it's a survey or something, but supposedly they've asked people, if you only had 24 hours to live,
right,
what would happen was all the phone lines in you know, if everyone
yeah.
knew that, phone
yeah.
lines would all be tied up because everyone would be calling other people to say how much they love them.
Yes, and why are they waiting, though? I don't understand that. Maybe that's me. So I guess I bring that part when I talk to people. I always say, I don't understand why you're waiting. Can you tell me why you're waiting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or I have this
mm-hmm.
famous thing. I'll say, when somebody says something to me, I'll say, tick-tock, tick-tock. And they're like, yeah, yeah, I know.
You need to carry around a huge clock that you pull out of your purse.
Yeah. Because time does go on, you know, as you say in your book, time does go on. It's just a matter of what you do with that time. You can't
right.
hold on to it. You can't control it. You can't physically change it. It's just how you
yeah,
value it.
Yeah, one thing
it,
I've
right?
been realizing as I'm getting older,
mm-hmm.
what legacy do I want to leave?
Yes.
You know, and
yes.
and so it's one of the reasons I think I keep writing books. Because
mm-hmm.
I know those will probably last. I can't guarantee that, but probably last and probably help other people, even when I'm not here. And so that's my kind of legacy. I want to show the world how to lighten up, and hopefully that will rub off on people
right.
and hopefully continue. So I think
yes,
we all have to look at what do we want to leave.
Absolutely, and not material things, not like jewelry or something in the bank vault. Because
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
what
yeah,
will it do?
Yeah, and I have a brother who I love dearly, but he's always focused on money.
Yeah,
everything is money, and it gets a little annoying talking to him sometimes because it's like mm-hmm. how much money he spent or how much money he saved or how much. And he's a gambler. And so how much he won, he never tells me when he loses, how much
yeah.
he won. And it's like, I won't say his name, but I tell him, why don't you, you know, you have enough money. You have plenty of money. Stop
mm-hmm.
being concerned about it. There are other things to be concerned about. And he does volunteer a lot, and he is a really good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this focus on money all the time that seems so weird to me. But I guess a lot of people do that.
Well, you know what, though, Alan? Over the past few shows, we've had discussions about this. And we always say when people in, I guess, about their 50s, 60s, and 70s, they get hit with these crashing diseases, cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, whatever. And we say, is there a spiritual connection in there? Is there an emotional? Is there something inside that may have just contributed also to that? And when we turn around and we look at that, we say, maybe that's the part of their life that they didn't look at, and they just ran really well with the other part of their life. So maybe that little piece of that connection, you know, is sometimes when you have throat cancer, you haven't spoken your truth. You haven't given out with your real
right,
thoughts.
Right.
You just kind of
yeah,
were
it's
a
kind
follower
of Louise Hayes
or something
thinking,
like that.
Yeah.
Right,
and my brother
right.
has had a heart attack, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Heart attacks do come from stress. And if you're stressed out about money, you
yeah.
know, I mean.
And we always say about money, I mean. Everybody comes to me as an alternative healthcare practitioner after their regular doctor can't fix them and they have a time limit and they want a miracle. They want, I have money, I can buy it. What can I get? Can I get a miracle from you? And the answer is I can't give you that miracle. The miracle has to come from inside you. It cannot come from outside you.
Right.
You know?
The other thing, and I've been thinking of maybe writing another book about what I call mini miracles. And they
mm-hmm.
happen every day almost to me.
Every
and,
day.
You know, they're not big things. They're little things. And I go, that's amazing. You know?
Yeah.
That is amazing. I just did a week-long retreat. I'm vice president of Unity of San Francisco, and Unity believes in one God, many paths. So they talk about Jesus and Moses and Buddha, but it's all about the great teachings and what we can learn today from these great spiritual leaders. And I was at a retreat, and I don't know what it was, but something called out to me. They had a whole healing center to do this treatment called BEST, B-E-S-T, and the letters each stood for something. It was bio, energetic, something, something. And I didn't get a lot out of the treatment, but I thought maybe down the road something will happen. When I came home, I looked on the computer to see what all that was, and I found out a woman and her father had invented it. And I almost fell off my chair. This woman is another speaker, and I heard her speak a couple of years ago, and she so resonated with me because she talked about energy and what energy was and how we're all connected with energy. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, that very night, my cousin that I said that I went back to New York to clean her apartment, I got a call in the middle of the night that my cousin had died, and so I got on a plane to go back east that day. But I used part of this woman's speech in my eulogy. And to find out now that I was drawn to do this treatment, and it was invented by this woman that I hadn't heard about for like 5 years, that I really was drawn to, kind of was like, this is amazing. This is like a little miracle.
Yeah. Isn't it?
So
it's
those
just,
kind
you just
of connections.
Find little things. Yes.
Yeah. So look, I advise people, look for the little miracles. They are there, all the mini miracles, I call them. Like
and
2 weeks ago, I found a $100 bill on the street.
Oh,
$100 bill.
Do you know what? It was so funny. I had a dream a few nights ago, probably 2 nights ago, that there was money all over the place, and I was just running around grabbing it up, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. And then I woke up.
Not.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
No, it's not funny. And did you find any money, or did money come in your life soon after that?
Not yet. Not yet.
It will.
See what I said? Yes, not yet. It will. It just hasn't.
You know, I totally believe
yet.
In affirmations and dreams. And so if one affirmation I have is, the world treats me as royalty wherever I go. But my friend, I told that to a friend, and he said he has one that he says all the time, and he's pretty wealthy. And he says his affirmation is, I'm floating in piles of money.
Mm-hmm.
And floating in piles of money. So you have that dream. It's telling you, I think it's telling you that you're going to come into some money soon.
And they were bills. They weren't change, which is great.
That is great.
You know,
I love
we
it.
Can all save our, we can all save our pennies, but it's nice when it's a bill, you know?
You know, money, it's funny. I find money on the street almost every day.
Really?
And I collect it. Then at the end of the year, I give it to charity. But my cousin that I talked about just a little while ago, she was always poking fun at me when she came to visit. She said, you're always finding money. You're always finding money. And so we went walking the dog, and she said, I never find money. And so we went walking the dog, and I went a little ahead of her, and I dropped a dollar bill on the street.
Oh,
and
goodness.
She comes up to she walks right over it. And
oh,
I
really?
Run back and I said, look, there was a dollar bill here. You didn't even see it. And, of course, she goes, you're always finding money. You're always finding money.
Oh,
so
gosh.
I think you need a look, too, for what you want. And look in your dreams or look in reality. But it's there. It will come to you. I believe in abundance. And so it will come to you.
Absolutely, and it takes time, and it will show up in its own time. You can't demand it. You can't hold it
exactly.
as hostage. You know,
exactly.
and you just have to be present. What about the topic?
Yeah, I may
talk
have
about
told
your...
this.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to talk about the book, Having the Time of Your Life, and that publisher has already published. This is the sixth book they published for me, and it all came about because Random House had published some of my books of division of Random House, then went out of that division, you know, they closed the doors to save money. And so for a year and a half, I struggled to find a new publisher for those books, and I could not find them, anyone to do that. So I put a sign above my computer that I saw every single day, and it said, "The perfect publisher will find me." And I went to a meeting, and I heard these women behind me say they have a very successful publishing company, but they're looking for books that are uplifting, motivational, joyous. And I said, I have, you know, seven or eight of those books. They gave me their card to send the books, and their office was five blocks from my house.
Oh, my goodness.
Then they moved to a bigger office. This is even more amazing than that. They moved to a bigger office. I was invited to their party, and a woman comes up to me. She said, "You don't know me, but I know you, and I own this company. I live in London, and I know you. I used to live across the street from you, and I'd watch your dog. You walk your dog every single day."
Oh, my goodness.
And I kept thinking, the perfect publisher found me.
Yes, that's right. Instead of trying to go out and trying to demand and make it happen like so many people do, you know?
Right.
And then they take things that aren't even that great that may not be for them just because they believe it was presented to them. Well, if it's not what it's really meant to be, then perhaps that's something just presented.
Yeah, and just to add to that, you do need to put energy into it. Like, you know, I have written the books. I tried to get them republished, but it wasn't working, so I just kind of let it go. Let it go. We hang on to stuff, and we block that energy.
Yes, and when you hold on to it, put it out there where you can see it, feel it, and touch it, and know it, too.
Right. Are we getting too serious here?
Oh, no. So what I want to talk about is the next chapter in your book where it says why we're here. Boy, doesn't everybody have that topic on their mind lately. And you know what? I can say, honestly, I don't even remember anybody ever bringing up that conversation until the last few years. How about you?
Well, the reason I wrote the book, because as I was getting older, I was going, you know, why am I here? What is life? Why am I here? It's good. I think the previous show we talked about my wife had a rare liver disease and died at the age of 34. And she was actually inspirational in me lightening up about life, not taking it so seriously, getting into therapeutic humor. So those questions kept, you know, bugging me. I'm in my 70s now. She died at 34. You know, why am I still here? And so I just start collecting stories from other people and wonderful quotes about that and put it together. That's how this book started. So do you want to talk about why we're here? Why are we here?
Absolutely. Why are we here?
I don't know. Asked you, why are we here?
If I had any answers, we still wouldn't be looking at the questions. You know, I don't really – I think it's so diverse and it's so I think why are we here could be something one second and it could change in the next. But a lot of people like to say we're here for peace, we're here for love, we're here for compassion. Yeah, okay, but in this moment, why am I here? I'm here to open my door and smile at the kids that are walking by. I'm here to cook dinner for my family. I'm here, you know, whatever it is. Because that's the progression of life. But if you want a real profound question, I guess that would be peace, love, and compassion. So, but you still have to live life in the meantime. So, isn't that both the same answer?
I'll take it. I collected all these quotes. I'm not sure I have an answer. Why we're here, I think sometimes I call myself the ambassador of light. And I think maybe I'm here to show people how to lighten up about almost anything. I mean, I'm doing a speech this Sunday. It's called Seeing Demise Through Humorous Eyes. So I'm looking at how we can lighten up about death and dying because people don't put all that together. So maybe that's my role. I don't know. And as you say, maybe that will change in a year or so or whenever. But in the book, when I collected some of those wonderful sayings or quotes or stories, they seem to fall in a couple of categories. One was to learn about ourselves,
right.
And the other was to serve others.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the quotations are around those because they seem to, when I ask people, that's the grouping that happened. And you know, there's all those studies about volunteering and how people volunteer are happier and live longer. So maybe it is to serve others.
You know, it is absolutely incredible that we're talking about this right now, just how you said that, because I had spoken with my daughter the other day, and she works in the emergency rooms. So she sees all kinds of things in different hospitals. And she's going to be an emergency room physician. And she said, you know what, and then I said, well, what are you doing? She says, I'm looking up for the volunteer opportunities at the new hospital I'm going to. I said, what are you talking about? She says, oh, well, I'm always a cuddler in the NICU when I go to a new hospital. She goes up and sits with the children in the intensive care and sits with them every once in a while because that grounds her, and because she sees so much in the ER, she just goes up and does that. And, you know, that is just – and she's only – 23 years old. I mean, where does that come from at such a young age? I mean, I don't think...
It comes from you. You were her parent.
You know, and I think, I mean, I remember doing all those things, and I remember one time I was working as a nurse's aide at one time, because I was a single parent of four kids, so I really had to work a lot. And it was at a place where it was like rehab, and a guy was there for a long time. And he used to draw these beautiful pictures, but all he could ever draw them with was this little tiny pencil that he stole from somebody and write them on napkins from the meals. So I had my son, and I said, come on, let's go get him a pad and get him some pencils to draw with. And I brought my son in on visiting day that day, and he gave him to the guy. And don't you know, the place was like, don't you ever do that. You can never do that. You can never care for somebody outside of, you know, you work here. So don't ever do that again. And it was like, oh my goodness. Oh. And we just think, you know, and there are a lot of people like that. And we really want to give and we really want to help. But sometimes there's things around that just don't allow it. So we just have to keep trying, I think. And now the decades are changing, so more people are allowing of these things to happen.
Yeah, you know, you as you said that, I opened Having the Time of Your Life book, and there was a wonderful quote by Maya Angelou. It is a wonderful quote, and it is, I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel.
Yes.
So true.
And all I can think of is that, you know, I hope they let him still have those, because I had to quit after that. And I hope they still let him have them, because, you know, here was this man with nobody visiting him ever. And, you know, you really want to bring sunshine into people's lives. And I think that's what I always tried to do. And it doesn't matter if it's just looking at them or paying attention to them or whatever. It doesn't always have to be things. And sometimes it's welcome and sometimes it's not. And what we have to just know that is that we're just still there to keep doing it. We're still there to keep shining.
Keep doing it, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you talked about compassion before. And that's exactly what you were doing, being compassionate with someone that has no visitors, no family, no help.
And so many people you see out there, you know, with this domestic abuse thing, I don't know if you've noticed it, but since that has been a lot on the media, a lot of women have been trying to leave recently. And what that sparked, we live in New Orleans, it sparked an awful lot of killings of women and children. And because they were trying to do that, they were trying to leave and they couldn't do that. So we want to really encourage people to become strong inside themselves, you know, and get support from other people, find other people around, you know, surround yourself with someone that will help bring you up every day, and then you'll have the strength to be able to change your lives and make it a great life, you know, and
or they can read one of my books.
Right, and have courage to do that because your books give you courage every day. You know, if you can have a little light of courage, right?
Yeah, courage, hope, and laughter.
Right.
What could be better?
Absolutely.
You know,
it is something.
And if they don't have the money, they go to the library, and the library can probably get the book for them.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
It's not about money. It's not about things. For me, it's about the message. And they can get the message without actually buying the book, too.
And, you know, I just opened the book to the page and it says, Alter Your Life by Altering Your Attitudes by William James. Isn't that so true?
Incredible. Yes. You know, Viktor Frankl talked about changing his attitude in the concentration camp and talks about finding humor there every single day. I can't imagine that. But he credits it with, in part, with saving his life. And he said the only thing we really have in any situation is our attitude.
Yes.
So important. We always have a choice in any situation. I don't care what it is. We have a choice of how we react to it. So we can make it a burden or we can lighten up about it.
Yeah, and we don't want to spew our negative attitudes onto others either. We really want to be able to deal with our life, you know, and be able to take and make some changes about our attitudes too.
Right, right. I'm just thumbing through the book while you're talking to see if something pops out to me.
I've got one. Life is
okay.
Made up of year. Life is made up of years that mean nothing and moments that mean it all. C.P. Snow. Sorry. So isn't that, you know? I mean, years. You could do years and years, and it's just like rote things that you're doing. But there's always little glimmers in there that are just really. I'm going back to my title, the charm bracelet of the mind.
There you go.
There you go. So I mean, you can get that right out of that. You know, you could just pick those out of your life. You know, these little glimmers of hope.
Right. There's one of the people asking, what is my favorite quote in the book? And I have several, but I love this one by Stuart Emery. And I maybe because I love it, because remember the days of EST, E-S-T?
Oh, yes, I do.
Werner
and I went
Erhard.
Through that. Did you?
I went through it, yes. And Stuart was my trainer, and
yes,
I really liked him for 2 weekends. So I love his quote about life. He said, getting born is like being given a ticket to the theatrical event called life. It's like going to the theater. Now all that ticket will get you is through the door. It doesn't get you a good time, and it doesn't get you a bad time. You go in and sit down, and you either love the show or you don't. If you do, terrific. And if you don't, well, that's show business.
Oh, goodness. Yes, and you know, life can hand you a lot of challenges, and it's how you respond to them.
Right.
You know, it's not always hunky-dory daisies and lollipops, you know?
Yeah, it's, and again, it's all your choice, all attitude.
Yeah.
And that's going to, it is the subject kind of my next book, You Can't Ruin My Day. Is the title. And what I realize is that people give away their power to other people or to situations.
Yes.
And that if we could take back our power, we'd be much happier, probably healthier, and not let other people or things ruin our day. So that's the premise of that book. And it has 52 ways of taking back your power and having a great day every day.
And I think so many people have given away their power. They just don't know what that means. So we've spoken a lot about that on the radio before, and we'll watch for that book too, and that'll be really great because for those who don't know what it means or how to be able to make changes, there'll be little things that will be able to help guide them. So that'll be a really great book to look forward to.
And each of the sections has their wake-up calls. I call the little lessons wake-up calls. So there's a wake-up call. Then there's a start-up, which is a little exercise of how people can actually use that wake-up call. Then, because I'm the world's only jollytologist, there has to be humor.
Yes.
So there's a lighten-up. There's a lighten-up. So there's a wake-up, a start-up, and a lighten-up. And so each one of those wake-up calls will have a little bit of humor because I truly believe that, like in the word enlightenment, to be enlightened is the word light. And when you look at some of the great guru leaders of the world, often they're very lighthearted and don't take life so seriously. So that's a little preview of coming attractions of the next book.
So, Alan, we're coming to the end of the show. Could you please tell us about some of your other books?
Well, my first book is The Healing Power of Humor, which thank you, whoever is in charge of this, in a 40th printing and a 9th language. So it's all over the world. And that has 14 techniques of how to increase your sense of humor. Second book is The Courage to Laugh, which is about humor in more serious death and dying times and grief. Another book is Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, which is going from loss to laughter. And then there's a number of the uplifting quotation books, inspirational books, The Art of Living Joyfully, Inspiration for a Lifetime, and lots others that I can't remember all the titles.
Well, it sounds fabulous. Do you have a website?
Oh, yeah, and people can see all the books there. It's www.alanklein.com. They just have to make sure they spell both of my names right. So it's A-L-L-E-N-K-L-E-I-N, alanklein.com.
Well, Alan, it was a pleasure to have you with us today. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's definitely an uplifting book. So I'm hoping that the listeners will take advantage and purchase one of your books. It would be great.
Thank you, and don't forget to have the time of your life.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
If you'd like more information about Alan Klein, his website is on the bottom of today's show page. It is www.alanklein.com. And the book we were talking about today is Having the Time of Your Life, Little Lessons to Live By. And I think it's a fabulous book. As Alan has said, you know, he really tries to inspire and to uplift. And I really think that's so vitally important in these days. You know, every day that goes by, you can't sit down in the doldrums the entire time because you know what, TikTok, the next day is going to come along and you may just keep repeating that pattern. So get out and enjoy life because that's really what it's all about. And as I've done so much of work with end of life, please don't wait until that last week or two or that last second or so because you really have so much more to benefit in your life if you can take advantage of it earlier. So thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher for Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and hope to see you again tomorrow. Thank you and have a great day.